Magpie learns many of the things that, what anything, it could teach you anything, but it called a dog. We had a dog, which is a normal name, I guess. We called him Jack. I guess we had lots of Jacks, but we had one that was a dog we called Jack, and so this magpie would call just the same way as any of the family might, and he would call, "Hey Jack, hey Jack, hey Jack," and then the dog would run over and begin to look around and see what it was, and then it'd look up and see it was a magpie that was calling, and then he'd drop his tail and his ears and get upset about it there because the magpie was calling to it. But what happened, one story with the deal was, back in the years was Horace Chesbro was the first one that come in when he first came up into Idaho Falls, and he started there as selling pianos. He didn't have any store at that time. He was simply selling pianos, and he came up to our place there. My older sister Luella played piano, and so Horace Chesbro sold a piano to my sister, and I had this magpie at that time, and of course the magpie didn't like Horace Chesbro because he was strange there, and he'd come in there, and so the magpie would want to fight Horace Chesbro and get him out of here, and so it'd jump right on the table where Horace Chesbro would be, and maybe his hands there on the table, and the magpie would jump over there and start to swear at Horace Chesbro, and then he'd go and stick his tail off to one side and his head one, and walk sideward there and walk up to the Horace Chesbro over to his hand, and then he'd peck his heart real hard there with his beak, and would bite on the Horace Chesbro's hand, and even he'd bite it to where it would bleed. But then the magpie would peck him on the hand, and then he'd say, "Go away, go away, you son of a bitch, go away, go away, you son of a bitch," and he'd go on like that, and it tickled Horace Chesbro so much that it tickled him so much that he'd have tears come out of his eyes. He'd laugh so hard, and it just tickled him to death when this magpie would peck him and swear at him like that. And he'd come up real often. When he'd come up every once in a while, he'd get up here, and always wanted to hear about this magpie. And of course the magpie would go on calling other things too. He'd call for the dog and he'd whistle and all that, but then he'd end up by swearing about and go away and all that sort of thing. But later on I had it, and back in those days we had thrashing outfits for the grain, for thrashing grain. And back then we had a steam engine that ran at that time. They didn't have, it was all just steel wheels and everything like that. They didn't have any kind of rubber tires, anything of that nature. But it was a steam deal, and it could whistle too, with like a train. It was steam. And then it had the other part of the, what we called a separator there, the part there that turned the grain, the bundle that turned through there and whipped the grain out. And the man run it there was Earn Hill owned the deal. the deal, and then the engineer that ran the steam engine, his name was Bill Semester. He was a big, rough-looking character, and of course, I think when I go back over it, I still don't like him. I hate him. He, of course, he's dead and buried long about that, but the reason of that was that I hated him so bad was because I was a kid there, at the back there at that time. Maybe it got up to 8 years old or nine, and I still had this magpie, and they had a way of, I mean, with the man that owned the deal, with Ern Hill and Bill Semester, they had their business way of telling one another when on the business and the trouble there or anything like that. And when Ern Hill, when he had a loud shrill that he whistle that he would he would whistle once loud and put his hand up and put stop this engineer to stop it there if he's having trouble in the with the other machine there, and so something had gone wrong inside of it, and so Ern Hill had gone inside of the machine, and then when he got out of there, usually, or he always would, he would blow two whistles, two loud whistles, and then the engineer, Bill Semester, he'd the two whistles there, he'd whistle two toots on the steam engineer, and then that right after that he'd turn it on with the big belt that went from there to the other machine that would that set it on. And in the meantime my magpie, they were working there close by. They were threshing at that time nearby there, down a half a mile below us there. And this magpie had flown down there where they were doing all these things, and he was interested about it and everything. And he had sat there on a post, and he had heard Ern Hill, that he had whistled on there with his two toots and on the whistle on his mouth that he'd done, and this magpie had heard this. And so Ern Hill was inside of the machine there with the trouble, but this magpie had whistled the two whistles, and the engineer thought it was Hill. And so he tooted his two whistle on his steam engineer and machine, and was ready to start the thing on. And Hill, he crawled out of there. He crawled out in a hurry there before the guy got started, or would have probably killed him inside of there. And he ran over there to Bill Semester and started to swear at him, and had a big argument there. And he said, what's the idea of starting the machine up? And he said, well, you whistled, give the two whistles, and I was ready to go. And he said, Hill said, I did not whistle. He said, well, you did. He said, I heard you. You whistled the two whistles. I heard what you say. He said, well, he didn't. They were having a big argument about it. And all at once, my magpie was sitting on a post there, and he whistled the two whistles like Ern Hill had done. And of course, then they both heard him there. And so then Bill Sinister went over and got the magpie. Of course, he was friendly, or he wasn't exactly friendly. He'd want to fight back on people like that, that he wanted to, no, he'd wanted to, wanted to, wanted to fight him back. But anyway, the engineer, he grabbed him and twisted his head, strung his head, wrung his head off, killed him. And so I felt awful bad about that, because he'd killed our magpie. I remember many, many years back there, a few years back there, someone had died there, and they were having it a place there in the cemetery there at Tetone and place there where at the cemetery, and they were going to be outside, and they had asked me to be there and sing for it there from the outside deal. And then another man by the name of Lawrence Hatch, he was going to speak there on the outside deal there, day deal. And we were ahead there in time there, so I was there, Lawrence Hatch and myself were just visiting and talking, because we were ahead there. And anyway, I looked down, and here I was standing on top of a grave there, and I looked at it. It was old Bill Sinister, the old engineer that killed my magpie. And so I looked down at that, and I said to Lawrence Hatch, I said, I didn't know that old SOB was buried down here. And he said, well, what said about him that you call him a name like that? And I said, well, the old SOB, he killed my magpie. And of course, Lawrence Hatch laughed about it. He thought it was funny, because about what I said. And he said, well, he said, I don't like the old SOB either. He said, a few years back there, I was here in Tetone, and some of my relatives and others there, Dick Egbert and some of the others, had gone way back to the head of Berry Creek, way back top, way back into there, and it was in November, and it was cold and snow, and some of them had gone way back in there to poach some elk in there, to bring some elk meat back in there. And of course, they weren't supposed to be back in there. It was poaching. But somebody heard that this old engineer, this old Bill Sinister, someone heard him call the game people in Jackson and told them that they were over there in Berry Creek, over there poaching. He had told the game people on there, and someone heard him about that. So he, whoever heard him, told Lawrence Hatch about it. And so he had to get a horse out at the evening that night, and it was in late in November, it was cold, and he got a horse and rode all the way all night over in the real cold there, and rode clear back into Berry Creek to let these other people where they could get out of there and leave before the game people come in there and arrested them. And so he said, I don't like the old SOB either. So we laughed a little about that.
There.
Ready to go?
Yep. Just have to press that one, and it does it automatically.
Well, we were talking a few nights ago there, telling about some of my pets. So we got one more that that I was thinking about, that was a coyote that I had. A lot of people around the country don't like coyotes. They're supposed to be bad. They kill everything. They kill the games. They kill cattle. They kill sheep, and they kill calves and all that sort of thing. But in all my years in the over 80 years, I have never in all my life, and I had sheep running in the pasture through the trees when at the time when we had lots of coyotes, and I have never had a sheep or a lamb or a calf, anything like that, that I have ever killed one by a coyote. I've had others where they've killed by dogs. I like dogs too, but I've had some killed by dogs, but not by coyotes. And so I get into trouble with a lot of people that argue about this sort of thing. One time I was arguing with quite a few other people on the same thing against me, and when I was there, two friends of mine that used to live up at Alta, northeast there, it's up about right in the area where Bob and Gwen have bought land there. At that time, it was all covered with trees at that time. Now it's cleaned out and everything. But Ted and Bill Brown, the two brothers there, they had sheep right out in that area, out in the trees all the time. And so they came into the cafe one time when I was arguing about the coyotes. So I asked them what is your experience with coyotes, with your sheep back there? It was right where all the woods and everything like that. And so they thought, and they both said, well, we've never had any sheep or lambs ever killed by coyotes, but we've had a lot of them that have been killed by dogs. The dogs have got right into our corral where they've killed sheep and lambs there. So that's different than what a lot of people seem to think about it. But back in the years there, and many years back there when I had sheep and all that sort of thing, and we had quite a lot of coyotes around at that time, they hadn't ever used any poison like 1080 that they talked about that would kill everything that they used. It'd kill everything, even if they were, after they died, if anything else that ate it, it would kill them too later on. But during those years, I bought sheep in 1933, I bought sheep, and I had sheep there in my pasture and the trees and everything. That's how they were all the time. And in all those years, until I sold the sheep in 1956, when I went over the hill in Wilson to teach over there, and I had to get rid of the sheep, so I sold at that time. But in all those years, from 1933 to 1956, when I went over there, I have never had a sheep or lamb killed by the coyotes. But anyway, at that time, we had some coyotes, and I knew out west of my place there, southwest of my place, I knew that there was a pair of coyotes there and had a den there. And I knew they were there, and I could have killed them, but I didn't. That is the pair. The pair, they would stay together. They would take care of the pups until they grew and were big enough to leave, they'd stay together. The female and the male would hang together on that, and the male would carry food for the female and for the pups. And I knew about the den. And then I came along one afternoon, and two men that I knew had found about the den, N.H. White and Eli Lewis, they'd found the den there, and they were digging it out. They had shot the pair there, the female and the male there. They'd killed them, and they had dug into the pups down there to where he could get to them, and they were killing them at that time. And I got there just as they pulled one little pup there. They didn't even have their eyes quite out of there, open yet, and they just pulled this one and was gonna hit it over the head, kill it. And so I yelled at them and told them, I said, don't shoot that little pup. And they said, why not? And I said, well, I knew about this den for quite a while there. And I said, I've even put some food out for them there. And so I picked up the little pup, and then N.H. White, he said, well, he said, at least you ought to buy a box of White Owls of cigar there. And I said, well, when I get to town, I'll get some cigars if you want. So I took the pup with me, and a little bit of a fella there, and I had to took it home, and of course then had to feed it milk. It's just a little bit of a thing, and it was a little female, so I just put it right on the bed. That's where it slept, was right on the bed with me, and it had come up and it would pull on my hair and play with me at night, and wanted to play with me and all that sort of thing. And it was just a little bit of a thing. And so, of course, it grew, kept right in the house, and it fed, stayed under the table, and I fed it when I was eating. I'd feed it along with the scraps and everything right in the under the table and right with me, and it followed me around, and just like a dog with me, it would do just like with any other dog or pup, anything. It liked, if I'd throw a ball, it liked to chase that, and then it would run around back and forth me to try to catch it, and then it would come over to me to the ball so I could throw it back for it, and it'd run way back and get it and come back and run back and forth and just play with it, and just like any other dog or pup would. And it followed around with me all the time, but it was afraid of strangers, and if a stranger would come around, it would run away and hide out or keep away, and it would wait until after it was gone, and until any stranger would be gone before it would come back again. Sometime it might be gone for all afternoon before it would come back again. But I had it for 3 years after that, and then in one fall after that, it disappeared, and I couldn't find it any place like that. And later on, I found that carcass where somebody had shot it, and where they had taken its hide off, I guess, to sell for the hide. But I found where it was dead and where it was killed. So that was the end of another pet that I've had. Well, they both come down at that time.
They're supposed to.
Well, this is another different thing entirely, but I've told about some of my friends where I helped a colored guy where I helped rob a radio out of another car. Of course, they laughed at me about that, so I had to tell about what happened on that. But when I was teaching down in Pahrump, Mom and the kids used to go out to Las Vegas on the last of the week. When we had a chance, we'd go to Las Vegas and have dinner. And then I had a place in the truck where they could go in there and go to sleep if they wanted. And sometimes I liked to stay in there into the Riviera, wherever I wanted to go, and spend a little more time there. And so I had come back. I'd come back to the truck there, and when I got there to help Mom and the kids get straightened out, where they could go to out, where I could head for home, and this young colored guy was there working on a fancy red fancy car there to try to get the door open. And I said to him, I said, looks like you're having trouble there. And he said, yeah, he said, that's my brother called there. And he says, oh, I want to go in and get there, go to sleep. He says, I want to there, I can go to sleep, can't get in there. And my brother, he's in another place, and I can't get him down there to get in there. And I said, well, why don't you go to your brother and get the key to go in there? And, oh, no, he said, my brother, he wouldn't take his key, because he afraid that I take his car in there. So he wouldn't have me my key. He says, do you has a big, long, slim screwdriver there that you got there? And I said, well, I think I probably have. I'll see.
Don't play. Stop. Do stop. Play stop. Hit the stop.
So working on getting Iris and the kids so that they could straighten out there in the car so we could head for home. And just in a few minutes, I looked there and he jerked the door open there. He'd pried it open with my screwdriver, and he jerked the radio out of there and taken my screwdriver, and he was off on a run out in the night there. It was dark and everything was, he couldn't even see where he went or anything. So it was gone, and that taught me another lesson about that sort of thing. And